build a high-performing culture? This is Culture Architects. Candid conversations with extraordinary leaders sharing their biggest successes, failures, and lessons learned on their culture journeys. Here's David J. Friedman.
Welcome back to my conversation with Adam Bruckman, the president and CEO of One Digital. In our first conversation, we dove a little into the history of Adam's company and how he intentionally created a culture that would be transformative for customers and employees. Through One Digital's tremendous growth, Adam was pretty strategic as he sought acquisitions and partnerships that would help him preserve that company culture. So Adam, I want to go a little bit deeper now, and I want to talk more candidly about the lessons that you learned as you were going through your culture journey, particularly when you were growing the company so quickly. When you think about the things you've done over the years that have worked really well, I'm sure that there were some things that didn't go so well. You mentioned there are some acquisitions that looked like they would be good and ended up to not be, and there's a small number. But maybe strategic moves you made around culture that at the time you thought this will be a great idea, and afterwards you hit yourself in the head and say, that was kind of stupid. What was I thinking? And they always look stupid in retrospect. They didn't end up front. What's a mistake or two you made along the way that you learned from?
Yeah. You know, it's hard sometimes to separate sort of the specific cultural mistakes and sort of, you know, moves and sort of the business and operational moves that maybe damaged your culture a little bit without you knowing it. So, you know, some things that I think about maybe some new businesses, some acquisitions, some verticals that we thought, you know, we just got real bullish on, and maybe we're not in the spirit of, you know, one thing that's very, very big at One Digital is collaboration and really making sure that there's a lot of agreement and understanding in our employee base and our shareholder base on kind of what we're doing and why, and getting that buy-in. And as I think about things that maybe, you know, you think about, like, boy, you can't quite put your finger on it, but you're walking around certain weeks or months, you're like, God, there's something in the water or in the vibe, or we're off a little bit. People are, you know, you could measure it through engagement surveys today and those types of things. Back then, it was a little more of just, you know, keeping your eyes open and getting a sense of how people are doing. And some of it was kind of maybe a little bit of business strategy that we were maybe a little bit more forceful and felt like, well, here's what we need to do. And so it goes back to when I think about acquisitions today, you know, like the balance between being an operating company, which we are, and letting folks be entrepreneurial. And what made, you know, when you're, it's one thing when you're growing a business totally organically, but when you're bringing in teams that have been successful, they've been successful for doing certain things. And that balance between, you know, there's some examples that come to mind where we were very much on like, well, this is how you should run the business. And this is what the model office looks like for you to be able to grow. And what we realize is that folks are successful. They come in all shapes and sizes. There are things that help enable them, and we need to surround them with resources to do that. But we probably need to find a little bit better balance of, you know, it's not, and especially at our size now, I mean, my people know way more about the business than I do, right? But you kind of wake up one day and you have a idea and you get excited about it and you think it's going to be the answer to, you know, driving more revenue or solving customers' problems, and they don't all work. And so knowing when to just say, hey, being honest and open and saying, sorry, we put you guys through this, we're going to abandon this idea, or we're not, you know, this product or this partnership or whatever it is. So there are a handful of things like that, you know, it definitely, it's less about like, you know, here's what we want people to be cheerleaders for in our culture, and that either worked or it didn't. It's more about being thoughtful about the values that you've promoted and what makes tick, and then just realizing that, hey, even the top leaders in the company can overstep that or screw that up. And so I think creating an environment, David, the flip side of that is creating an environment where folks are comfortable enough to speak up, and so, you know, approachability from leadership, authenticity from leadership, servant leadership, all mm-hmm. of those things that across our management base, our leadership base. That is what promotes the type of culture that we have. And so, you know, you got to really be careful about leadership, and that's gets back into the M&A discussions if you're opening up new markets. But you know, having folks be able to come in, and I'm very fortunate. We have a whole team that we call people and culture. Years ago, I brought in someone that had been working for a long time. Elizabeth Crane has been with me maybe 15 years. She was running our marketing teams, but she just had a sense for people, and she was one that could always sort of, if I wanted to know what was going on or what I was missing, this is back maybe, you know, 100, 200 employees, you know, she just, everyone would approach her. And so mm-hmm. it was a little bit of a secret weapon to say, what am I missing here? What's sort of, where are we misdirected? And so, you know, I took her to lunch one day, I'm guessing it's 8-9 years ago, I need to ask her, and said, you're really good at what you do, but I can't do this all myself. I need you to help me build a team around just continuing to develop our people and our culture. And we need this to be, you know, we're getting to be too large an organization for this. It can't just be me, you know, getting on, you know, monthly meetings and town halls and those types of things. And so that we moved her into where she's now our chief people officer. She has been for years. She's, you know, was not an HR background, but she also has gone back at all the more tactical stuff and has teams running talent and talent management and development programs and, you know, recruiting and traditional HR. And so that entire team, you know, onboarding new employees, onboarding new agencies, and we have lots of different teams on that. But, so again, just taking your question full circle, some of the things we did wrong, I think got quickly corrected because we've created an environment where folks are going to, you know, they're going to nudge us a little bit and say, hey, you've worked too hard at this. You know, you're kind of, you're missing something here. So, anyway, that's what I would say.
And it makes a lot of sense. You know, in what I teach, of course, I talk about the behaviors that define a culture, which we call fundamentals. And one of my favorite ones, although I'm accused of often saying lots of different ones are my favorite ones, but one of my favorite ones, I call it check the ego at the door. And I often say that in my observation, the single biggest cause of organizational dysfunction is usually ego. And one of the aspects of ego, and you gave a good example of it, or checking the ego, is the ability to change course when new information becomes available. That you see leaders sometimes, and they stick with something because I said it, and I don't want to look stupid if I go back and now I change my mind because I just said we were going down this path. And so it takes a certain degree of humility and checking the ego to be able to say, I was wrong. You know, we've got new information. I appreciate your input, and you've created an environment, it sounds like, where it is not only safe, but expected to push back or to speak up and to be candid and say, Adam, I got to tell you, I don't think this works. And you've shown the leadership to be able to say, you're right, I can listen to that. And I don't have an ego that says, well, no, I got to stick with what I said. And that's pretty important. That's an important part of being able to get to where you are.
Yeah, I think definitely part of our culture and part of, you know, leadership. And we talk a lot about this and, you know, it's sort of that whole, you know, screening the front door and, you know, kind of protecting the back door. But it would be really tough to find folks in this organization that have very large egos. And I think we all have egos. We all are, it's part of what makes us good. We fight for things that we want, but we just sort of have an agreement that says, just like a family, you know, we talk about family a lot. You're going to disagree. And at some point we're just going to reach consensus on strategies. And, you know, there are times where I may get an extra vote, but at the end of the day, it's going to always be. And I think that's just part of, you know, what I value a lot and what I've tried. I've changed a lot over the years. It's probably easier for me to think about things that I've figured out on my, you know, just my own personality that's been helpful in some of this than sort of missteps from the company here and there. But as I've gotten a little more experienced and mature and realized where my strengths are, I think just being authentic and not, you know, I really don't believe I've changed much from when we were 30 employees to 3,000 employees. I just need a lot more people that are prioritizing culture the same way and thinking about things the same way. And so, you know, I do think, you know, for CEOs out there, you know, you set the tone. People are watching often how, you know, you interact, how you act in good times and especially in bad times. And so I think, you know, just trying to, you know, be authentic in who I am. And when we, as we get larger, it's a little bit harder, but trying to really show folks that, you know, we at the end of the day, we are, it's not all about how big can we get. And, you know, we're going to make decisions that we think are best for our employees, are best for our customers. And sometimes that is very successful and has a lot of growth. And I also recognize, you know, sometimes we are so driven that it wears our people out. And so one of my messages this year, there's a lot going on in the world, the workforce. You know, everyone's read about the, you know, great resignation. I spent a lot of time with my teams talking about it, thinking about it. And so we do tons of engagement surveys. We're trying to just slow down a little bit and get really focused on the two or three things that we think are really important for our business and for our customers and for our people. And sometimes you can, as you get larger, and you know, you've also been in some larger organizations, there's just so many priorities. At some point, nothing feels like a priority anymore. So simplification, quieting the noise, you know, we're doing things now that we haven't done before. We're trying out things like, you know, just having quiet periods in the day where we can't schedule meetings. You get over scheduled. I certainly struggle with that a little bit in my schedule, you know, cutting out, trying to do this at least, you know, after hour emails and weekend stuff and just, you know, sort of it can wait. Is a policy we're promoting now, because at the end of the day, you know, you have to respect balance. I mean, balance, like, you know, we talk a lot about life balance and, you know, following your passion. And, you know, this is a really important place for you to do your best work and live your best life. But it's not all about us and it's not all about work. And so anyway, there's so much there in today's environment and workforce to unpack there, David. But I just think I feel really fortunate that we've had 20 years of kind of setting the stage for a time period like now where we can just have really honest conversations with people about what's important to us. And you know, if it turns out this is not a fit in some way, shape or form, then we certainly want them to be happy and vice versa. You know, we want them to do good work for our clients. So, it's interesting times for sure.
Yeah. You know, when one of the questions that I am asked often from companies that I work with about culture is they'll ask me about, you know, the system that we teach culture-wise. They'll ask, so when does it not work? Or what's the difference between the times when it works really well and times that it doesn't? And I always say that at the end of the day, my observation and everything you've said in our conversation here sort of backs this up, is that in my observation, I say that the single biggest ingredient to success of any culture initiative is what I call CEO sponsorship. And when I use that word sponsorship, I use that word particularly because it doesn't mean you as the leader have to do everything. Obviously, as you've acknowledged, when you went from 30 to 3,000, you can't be doing. You needed, Elizabeth, you needed more people to help you with this. But at the end of the day, what I hear in our conversation is you are the chief sponsor of culture. You're the one at the top of the food chain who says, this is important to us. We are not compromising about this. And I'm sure there have been many times over your career where even in an organization like yours that has promoted culture, there have probably been times where out of expediency, somebody wanted to do an acquisition that you felt like, I don't know if this is going to be a good fit, or somebody wanted to hire somebody that I don't know if this was right. And if it doesn't have you at the top saying, no, we're not compromising about this, it's easy to start to slide down that path. And I hear a strong level of sponsorship from you about this.
Yeah, look, I think there's no doubt that, I mean, it takes leadership. It takes everyone in the company to maintain it, to continue to build and promote it. But, you know, I think, you know, I've talked to lots of leaders and friends that are, you know, running companies, and, you know, they get really passionate about culture. And, but they want a bit of a checklist and say, how do I do this? And at the end of the day, I mean, it has to really be a priority. It has to be in your DNA. It has to be something that you're willing to make some hard decisions. And there's, you know, I think that's going to become more and more important going forward. And so it's something that it takes time. It takes a lot of energy, but it is certainly what I've learned. You certainly can't have it at a CEO level alone. I mean, it has to be, you have to make the tough decisions around the people you surround yourself with. And when you do that the right way, and again, I'm just very blessed and, you know, it's a great team. Everyone cares about this, and it really is a priority for everyone, but it has to start with sponsorship, at the C-suite for sure. The CEO suite, you can't delegate it. Folks are going to see right through it. It has to be authentic. There's times where it's going to be tested and you just have to stick with your gut. I mean, and it's, you know, I go back to the early partnership days. It's like, you know what? There are probably some times where, you know, financially it would have been better to stick with a contract or to not let someone out of a termination permit or whatever it is, but culturally it wouldn't have set the right tone, and it probably years down the road it would have come back around. So you've got a lot of great principles, and you got one chance to make a great first impression, do the right thing, lead with integrity. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to approach it. There's not one formula, but at the end of the day, it has to be who you are and it has to be what you value, because you can't, you're not going to be able to pull it off year over year over year if you read it from a book and you say, yeah, that's what I want us to be. Right. You have to really own it and believe it.
Yeah, that's why it starts with you. You know, the two last comments I'll make and ask you one last question. So the reason I call this whole podcast Culture Architects is because I do think of this as architecture, that, you know, there's a quote that is in my last book that I use all the time, but I think it gets to the essence of what we're talking about. And the quote that's in that book says that good companies have good cultures by chance, but world-class companies have world-class cultures by design. And it really gets to the heart of, you said this earlier, you're going to have a culture anyway. The question is, did that just sort of happen by accident? Or are you as a leader taking control over this, architecting it, designing it? To your point, it requires everybody else's involvement. Right. But is this happening in an intentional and systematic way? Or is this just luck and it accidentally happens? Right. And it sounds like, clearly from many years ago, you made a decision and have stuck with that decision because it's part of your DNA, as you said, that no, this isn't going to happen by accident. We're going to be really purposeful about how we do this. So yeah. If you were giving, you're talking, I'm always curious about anybody who's been doing something for a long period of time, you've accumulated some wisdom, and some of it from mistakes, some of it from successes, but wisdom nonetheless, over these years of being a leader and a leader of a great culture. If you were talking to some new leader, and I'll bet you have these opportunities. I'm a new CEO and I'm 32 years old and I'm starting my company or I'm building a company and I meet Adam Bruckman and man, I wish I could be like Adam someday. That guy's got that culture thing figured out. And if I were having lunch with you and I said, Adam, so what's the top one or two lessons that you would say that, as you grow your business and you want to really continue to build a great culture, you got to do this one or two things. I know it's not that simple, but what would be the top pieces of wisdom you would offer to a young CEO?
Yeah, well, look, I think I'll go back a little bit to what we said in the beginning, which is, really understanding how you want to define your culture and connecting it, especially if you're a young, if it's a new business, you're going to be thinking about your business and where you're going and who the customer is and what you're trying to solve for. And so I think you've got to be very mindful of, what is going to be important to, who are the constituents that you're sort of trying to, appeal to and work with. And so I believe personally, my advice would be the people that show up every day on your team have to be in that equation first and foremost. You can't just say, here's the 10 things we're going to do to treat customers. There has to be an internal fabric to, you know, what does it mean to be part of this? And I believe that. So I would think about the customer piece and what, you know, what kind of tone you're setting, what kind of actions, you know, that you want folks to, you know, you want your brand to stand for something. So what's sort of the customer side of that? And then culturally, you know, you're going to be recruiting people and training people and, you know, on sort of living out that brand. And so they have to, you know, see things the same way, have the same values and instincts and that type of thing. So, you know, as you start, you know, growing the business and continue to grow the business, you got to continue to reassess the types of people that you want there. But then I just think, you know, where I've always been very passionate about coaching. I coached my boys when they were young, and I coached, you know, even at one point went back and coached high school lacrosse for 5 years while we were building the business. And I just love the dynamic of, you know, putting people in positions where they can be successful. And my greatest day and my sort of what drives me and fuels me is just seeing other folks really kind of, you know, get to new levels and accomplish things. And so that's just what charged me up. But I think first and foremost, as a CEO, you've got to ask yourself, like, what is it that are you starting a business just because, like, this is a problem I'm so passionate about, I want us to solve it? Or is it because you want to have, you know, I take a lot of pride and a lot of responsibility in having, you know, thousands of families that are, you know, it's you know, we're employing a lot of folks and we're doing a lot of good work. And hopefully they go home and have, you know, have some financial security. So there's multiple sides of that equation. And I think first and foremost, you got to really understand who you are and what you stand for and what it is you want to do and what's going to get you excited. Because if all you do is build a culture that says we're going to be the best company at, you know, we're going to return every phone call on this and it's going to be a customer service. And then, you know, if you try to look forward years down the road, is that really what's going to fire you up and everyone's going to join that mission? Or is there some internal sort of component to what you want life to be like at your company? And I would say the latter. We've changed our business model a few times. We've changed our, you know, what we provide to customers and what problems we're solving for. But what we've never changed is sort of the feeling that we want folks to feel like this is a family and it's a safe place and you're going to have an opportunity to be successful. But we expect you to, you know, embrace these values and principles if you think this is the place for you. And so I would just caution folks not to try to figure that out, you know, over a weekend and say, here's the, you know, and you do a lot of great work on principles and customizing those and all that stuff. And I think that's a big part of it, but, you know, it's going to take time. It's got to evolve. And I've learned so much from folks that have come in the organization that have, you know, quite frankly, taught me a lot, and I've grown as a leader and they've grown. And so I think, you know, it's just, I would say, be patient, be committed, you know, be authentic and own your culture. It's your brand. It's, you know, it's your legacy. And that's something that, you know, very, very grateful and very humbled by what we've been able to do.
That's great. So if I were to distill what I heard you say, I'm hearing maybe two things in there. Tell me if I have this right. One is, I hear you make an interesting distinction between who we want to be to the customer marketplace and who we want to be to our employee marketplace. And I hear you saying it's important to be thinking about both of those. And if anything, maybe the second of those is even more important, because the strategy could change about what we're doing with the customers, but who we are as people is, you know, is a more enduring perspective.
I think so. And thank you for distilling that down. But I think, you know, it's particularly impactful. I would be thinking about it even more today than 20 years ago, because at the end of the day, you know, I believe folks want to wake up with, you know, a commitment, a purpose, a passion, engagement in what they're doing. And, you know, the what they're doing can evolve, and the what the company's doing can change and evolve. But that buy-in, we have a lot of expressions around here about having each other's back, about being all in, about being bold. We do things like we have bold talks where people just share personal stories at conferences and stuff, may or may not have anything to do with the business. But, you know, like having folks, I know, you know, a lot of, you know, a bit of a Simon Sinek fan, but finding your why. And so marrying that individually to what sort of the company message is, like folks think of certain things when they think of Apple, or they think of safety when they think of Volvo. That's harder to do in certain services businesses. So your culture really is, to me, it's more about the experience that you want employees to have and feel and really just be part of something special. And then, especially in what we do today, you know, if you get that right, then what you deliver to the customer, especially today, every customer wants to be thinking about their culture and their people and all that. So, you know, I feel very fortunate now. We look in the mirror all the time and say, all we want to do is help clients feel like we feel internally. And there's a lot of different tactical ways, you know, there's insurance, there's, you know, services, there's all kinds of ways to help execute on that. But at the end of the day, it's really about having this very purposeful, sort of mission-driven engagement with your employee base, and that's and your family, I should say, and your team, and that's really what I think we've done in kind of a special way.
And if I'd add one last comment to that, it's your comment that you said before, and you as the CEO own that.
That's right.
You know, you need others to help, but you own it, and I think that's really what being a culture architect is all about. Is you own the culture, can't do it alone. But you can't delegate that to somebody else. You're the owner of it. Adam, thank you so much for a great conversation. I really appreciate you joining us today. A lot of wisdom there, and I know a lot of people will benefit from the comments you've had. Congratulations on the success you've had, and given your commitment to culture and given the commitment to and your passion around what you're trying to build, I don't have any doubt that when you're at 6,000 instead of 3,000, you'll still be singing the same tune and your company will still be a reflection of the things you think are really important. So congratulations and thanks again.
Thanks, David. I enjoyed the conversation and thanks for all you do. You're known in our industry and certainly a lot of folks have learned a lot from you and in what your experience has been. So I've enjoyed the conversation and thanks for the time.
My pleasure.
And that's it for this episode of Culture Architects with my good friend and fellow culture architect, Adam Bruckman. If you're enjoying this show, make sure you take a second to subscribe so that you automatically get my new shows when they drop. And also, if you have a minute, I'd love it if you would leave us a review so that more people like yourself can discover the show. I'll see you next time.
This has been Culture Architects with David J. Friedman. Join us next time for more insights and wisdom from great leaders in all walks of life. To book David for your next event, or to learn more about his writing, speaking, or consulting, go to davidjfriedman.com. Culture Architects with David J. Friedman is a production of CultureWise.